Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome back to yet another edition of WWE Rivalries. It is Friday, November 6th, as all my American friends are probably all enticed in the wave of election news and possibly fraudulent election votes. And look, I'm just an innocent bystander up here in Canada, so I'm not going to get all into that. This is an escape for all you guys to get away from all that nonsense that's going on down there in the United States right now. But we're back for a very special edition of Rivalries because we are back on track with the Rivalries theme. As last week, obviously, I took a break and dedicated an entire episode to the career of one Kurt Angle. In an episode that I thought was very, very needed to talk about a career that I find sometimes gets flown under the radar. But this week we are back to cover one of the most brutal rivalries of the early 2000s and personal rivalries that was also had a lot to do with friendship, and that is Triple H versus Shawn Michaels when Shawn Michaels returned in 2002. And I'm really excited to get into that today. But before we do that, as per always, I like to give my thoughts a bit on the current product. First of all, on Monday Night Raw, I'm more optimistic about Raw than I've been in quite some time. And I've always liked Drew as champion. I think Orton's done a masterful job since around WrestleMania season. But I think now that they're in intertwining The Fiend into this championship picture, I'm really curious to see where they go with it. I'm still not sure if The Fiend is a babyface or a heel. I read a report following his title loss to Roman Reigns that they were going to push him as a babyface, but that was back when he was over on SmackDown. Now he's over on Raw, and while he almost seems like a de facto heel, he's going up against and tormenting mentally one of the biggest heels over the past year in Randy Orton. So that whole angle, I'm really interested to see. I think it's too bad, on one hand, that we're going to have to wait until after Survivor Series to get at least a first match to this. But then on the other, I'm also kind of happy about that because it's going to be a slow burn, which I always have time for. As for Drew McIntyre, look, I've said it numerous times, I want him to get the belt back before WrestleMania. I think it is essential and crucial that Drew McIntyre goes into WrestleMania as the WWE champion. But in saying that, I think for the time being, he would be best served to maybe detach himself a bit from this rivalry, give it time to breathe, and just let Randy Orton deal with The Fiend. Obviously, he has an upcoming match with Roman Reigns at Survivor Series in the world champion face-off match. But I think that there's a lot of options for Drew in the short to mid-term to do while Randy Orton and The Fiend Bray Wyatt have their little blow-off. And I think we saw a bit of a hint of that on Raw, and I've been saying for quite some time, I would love to see a program between Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. Obviously, they have a past, they've known each other for over 10 years, and I just think their styles and in the ring would be a really cool clash. And they're both physical guys, big guys, and obviously you have the Celtic connection, one of which being from Ireland, one of which being from Scotland. And I just really think that this is a program and a match that the WWE could do a lot with and would be a really good program in the short term to just, you know, buy Drew some time and then eventually get back into the title picture. And, you know, Sheamus as a whole, I really think is a guy that has been underutilized since his return from being disbanded from the Bar. And I think he came back right around this time last year. He obviously started feuding with Shorty G or Chad Gable, whatever he's calling himself now. And I think that the way that they've used Sheamus and to date since his return, his biggest program has been involved with Jeff Hardy, which at least in my mind got old really fast. But he's a guy that I don't know how much runway he has left in his career. Obviously, he's been around for about 12 years. I think he debuted in early 2009 or late 2008, if I'm not mistaken. And he's a guy that has not held a singles championship since 2014. That's crazy, when he held the United States Championship, when he actually won a Battle Royal on Monday Night Raw to take it off of Dean Ambrose, and later lost it to Rusev. And obviously he's had numerous championship runs as the tag team champions alongside Cesaro when he was a part of the Bar. But now that he is he's back as a singles competitor, I really think that they should strike while the iron is hot with Sheamus. You know, he's a guy, he's gotten himself into crazy good shape. You can make the argument that he's even in even better shape than he was before he went away for a bit in 2019. And he's a guy that I think would be best served to turn babyface. He's been heel now for, I want to say, 5.5 years. The last time he was a babyface was when he was fighting alongside John Cena against the Authority, this time 6 years ago, took a break, came back right after WrestleMania season as a full-blown heel with the Mohawk. Then he actually won the Money in the Bank, won the WWE Championship by cashing in on Roman Reigns, had his brief run with the League of Nations, one of the most underwhelming factions for a long time. But given the shallow roster of babyfaces, and I think for a while I was saying that it was mostly on SmackDown that they were lacking babyfaces, but now I feel that the same thing has happened on Monday Night Raw, where after Drew McIntyre, who's the top babyface? Like, Randy Orton, top heel. Bray Wyatt kind of straddling the fence there on babyface and heel. And even if they want to push him as a babyface, he's not the prototypical babyface we're accustomed to. AJ Styles, full-blown heel right now. Braun Strowman, still, I'm not sure where he fits in that. Then you have the Hurt Business, who's a group of heels. I'm forgetting their name now. Retribution, there you go. Retribution, who is a group of heels. I don't think Jeff Hardy or Matt Riddle, or just Riddle now, are guys who can really push in the upper mid card as baby faces at this point. So look, aside from Keith Lee, who they've kind of cooled off on since coming out like bats out of hell when he debuted in August and got an early win over Randy Orton, I think Sheamus would be a guy who would be best served to maybe turn babyface and go up against a guy like Bobby Lashley. Like, again, two big guys. I would love to see a match between them. Maybe get him back into the United States Championship picture. Maybe eventually get to the WWE Championship. I don't know. Sheamus is a guy that he's been heel for a long time, and he does excellent work as a heel. But at the same time, he has also done excellent work as a babyface. And his World Heavyweight Championship run, I believe it was in 2012, and notably his program with the Big Show was just an absolute knockout rivalry in that regard. So yeah, Sheamus is a guy I'll look for in the near future to, even if he stays as a heel, I would prefer to see him turn babyface, but even if he stays as a heel, I would really watch for Sheamus to maybe be used and pushed in the short to midterm to kind of, even if it's just to occupy Drew or maybe go toe-to-toe with Bobby Lashley or something like that after Survivor Series when the 5-on-5 match is done. Over on SmackDown, I mean, what can you say? The Roman Reigns angle, they are pushing this really well. Some of the best writing WWE has done in quite some time. Now it seems as though Jey Uso has turned heel. I would expect Jimmy Uso to do the same when he returns and maybe form a heel faction. And the best way to turn heel is to attack one of the most beloved baby faces of the last 5 years in Daniel Bryan. And I think that this all but sets up a program between Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. I don't expect Daniel Bryan to win the championship, but I'm sure that they will have several matches between now and the Royal Rumble before heading into WrestleMania season. And I've been thinking about what plans they have for Roman Reigns approaching WrestleMania, and obviously the big rumor is that it will be against The Rock. You know, he'll come back to challenge Reigns for who is the head of the table. But I've been thinking of something, and I'm not sure everyone will be in lockstep with me, but this is some fantasy booking, which I don't do often, but I can't help but think of this. What if Brock Lesnar returned to face Roman Reigns to complete the trilogy of matches at WrestleMania? And the way I think that they could do it is, what if Roman Reigns goes so heel now that he ends up turning on Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar returns in almost a babyface type fashion to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania? I'm not saying I would do it, but it's definitely something to think of, because Paul Heyman right now with Roman Reigns, while I still agree with the move initially, and I think it was an easy way to cement Reigns as a heel upon his return, I don't know if Paul Heyman is really needed with Roman Reigns right now. Like, sometimes I almost forget that Paul Heyman is there, and that's because they're giving Roman Reigns a lot of mic time. And I'm not against it. I think Roman Reigns is doing the best work of his career. But if Paul Heyman is just going to stand there, I'm not sure that there's a point to having him alongside Roman Reigns. Because at this point now, we're over 2 months into upon his return. Roman Reigns is a 100% heel. I think everyone is bought into that character. Obviously hard to judge with no fans in the audience. But I don't know if long-term Paul Heyman is a fit beside Roman Reigns, because we all know Paul Heyman's best attribute is his talking. But it seems as though Roman Reigns does not need a mouthpiece given his new character and his heel persona. And I think that he really has knocked it out of the park upon his return. So maybe that he turns on Paul Heyman and that leads to a Brock return. Obviously, in real life, we don't know Brock's status in WWE, and everything is up in the air on whether and if he will return, if he wants to return. But I think that is something that if the thing with The Rock doesn't work out and he can't get insured by his movie guys and he just can't fit it into his schedule, Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar, with Brock Lesnar playing the babyface, would be certainly something to look at. And I know that we've seen it twice before WrestleMania and numerous times on other pay-per-views, but I think that this is a rivalry that, at least in my mind, now people will accept it more. Because when people rejected Brock versus Roman Reigns, I think it was rejected more for the fact that Roman Reigns was being pushed as the babyface to come in and conquer the Beast. Because we saw how many people got behind Drew McIntyre in that respect, or how many people got behind Seth Rollins in that respect. But people never bought into the Roman Reigns babyface character. And as much as people on the internet want to shit on Brock Lesnar and say that he's no good and he's just a part-time champion and we don't want him, the fact of the matter is, I would say at least 50% of those people are lying, and the casual fan adores Brock Lesnar. Whenever my friends who just watch wrestling here and there hear that Brock Lesnar is on the program, they make it a point to watch. My girlfriend, who is an occasional watcher, her favorite wrestler is Brock Lesnar. I love Brock Lesnar. I think Matt loves Brock Lesnar. He is a draw. And no matter what you want to say, no matter how much you want to crap all over him, that he's a part-time champion and he's in it for himself, he is someone that draws and he's a very good worker. And if they were to go down the road of a third WrestleMania match between Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, I would be all here for it. And look, send your hate mail over. I don't mind if you guys think I'm completely out to lunch with that fantasy booking. But if they can't get The Rock locked in for a program with Roman Reigns, that is something I would really consider. Another guy on SmackDown that I've been saying this for quite a while now, but I really want them to do something with Kevin Owens. Something substantial. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but if you go back in time about 4 years, Kevin Owens was the face of Raw. He, for all intents and purposes, was the first ever Universal Champion. I know technically Finn Balor was, but he held it for a day. So in my mind, Kevin Owens was the first ever Universal Champion, and he held it from August all the way to February and lost it to, guess who? Goldberg, who came back to end yet another solid championship reign. But I think Kevin Owens right now is at a point where he needs something fresh. He needs a new wrinkle to his character. And since he's turned babyface and following his program with Seth Rollins, I feel like he's just been spinning his tires. His program with Aleister Black was just, it fell flat for me, and I don't think it's necessarily a knock on those two guys. It's just that I don't think WWE cared too much about that program. But now that Kevin Owens is on SmackDown, as he seems to be the guy who changes the most between brands, I'd like to see him go after the Intercontinental Championship. And who better else to feud against than his old buddy Sami Zayn, as they're both from my hometown in Montreal, Quebec. And I know that they kind of exhausted that rivalry ad nauseum in 2016, 2017, and then they aligned in 2017 and early 2018 to go against Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. But now that they have been kind of separated for, I want to say, a year, and they have not crossed paths for quite some time, having those two feud over the Intercontinental Championship would be really something. And speaking of the Intercontinental Championship, since Sami Zayn came back and won it off of Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles in the Triple Threat ladder match, I haven't seen it. Aside from a couple backstage vignettes from Sami Zayn, I have not seen the Intercontinental Championship utilized in any sort of capacity. And that would be a program for me that if you don't want to push Kevin Owens into the main event, as it seems like in the short term, Daniel Bryan's going to be the dancing partner for Roman Reigns, and then into WrestleMania season, it seems like it's going to be The Rock. Why not push Kevin Owens as, you know, a challenger for the Intercontinental Championship? And I think that would be something that would really benefit him. And to end this recap and my thoughts on the current product, we're going to go to something that I notoriously hate, and I didn't want to do this, but I can't avoid it any longer. The Mysterios. Okay, so I'm not going to go on a rant like I did about a month ago, but this is what I'll say about the Mysterios. Garbage. Absolute trash, garbage, poubelle, any kind of synonym you want to get or say that relates to garbage, that's what the Mysterios are. And now we are, let's say, 6 months running now that Seth Rollins has been entangled with the Mysterio family nonsense. So Seth Rollins, who is doing some of the best work of his career, character-wise, he is doing the best work he has ever done, in my opinion. And like I've said before, that's saying something, given his mega babyface championship run in 2019, his heel authority run in 2014, 2015. He is really right into this character, knees deep into this character. But it has been wasted for over half a year on the Mysterio family. And now we have Seth Rollins playing the role of Jerry Springer, where he comes out and does everything in his power to instill drama and put drama into the Mysterio family alongside Buddy Murphy. It is getting to a point now where I fast forward through these segments and I don't even get to watch Seth Rollins, who is one of my favorite characters in WWE right now. And it is a damn shame. And it is all because of the Mysterio family garbage. I cannot believe they are still going on with this crap. Please, can we move on? I didn't want to get heated today, but here we are, because just thinking about it gets me pissed off. How am I supposed to take it seriously that Dominic Mysterio and Rey Mysterio are still tangling with Seth Rollins? And why am I supposed to care that Buddy Murphy and Aaliyah are having some romance? Why do I care? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And another thing, what was the point of them getting drafted over to SmackDown if they were going to continue the same rivalry on SmackDown? The entire point of the brand split and the draft is to get fresh matchups, shake things up. But they took the entire program and just transported it over to SmackDown. They're doing the same thing as they were on Raw. It's just now that the backdrop and the ring ropes are blue. It's crazy. It's like, oh, well, I don't know how they thought of this in a production meeting. Just like, okay, we know people are probably getting sick of it, but if we change it to blue, then they'll forget and they'll be back interested. Like, I don't get it. Come on. Can we please just stop with this? Please. I don't understand. Like, and I talked about it a bit last week that, you know, two Monday Night Raws ago, it was AJ Styles versus Matt Riddle and Sheamus versus someone else who was on SmackDown. I forget who it was, but, you know, they took four guys who used to be on SmackDown and put them against each other, but now they're on Monday Night Raw. Well, why do I care? Like, look at the guys who are on Team Monday Night Raw. You know, three of the four guys, Braun Strowman, Sheamus, and AJ Styles, were on SmackDown a month ago. but now they're fighting for Monday Night Raw. And look, I like the idea of Raw versus SmackDown if the story makes sense, but this doesn't make sense. And most of all, it does not make any sense in any capacity with the Mysterios and Seth Rollins. But I'll stop there because I don't want to go off on another tangent. I already kind of did, so I'll just pump the brakes, I'll get relaxed, and we'll get into the reason why you guys are all here in a more positive mood. And that is for Shawn Michaels versus Triple H. So for those of you who weren't watching wrestling at the time or weren't born or were too young, Shawn Michaels was away from WWE as an active competitor from 1997 all the way to 2002. Sure, he came back a few times as, let's say, the special guest referee on the first ever SmackDown between The Rock and Triple H, or he was the commissioner in 1998 and 1999. But for all intents and purposes, he was away from the product entirely as an in-ring competitor for 5 years. And when he left, he was the biggest heel in the company. Think about it as if Randy Orton left WWE randomly in the year 2010 because he was the yin to John Cena's babyface yang. And at the time, that was Shawn Michaels to an upcoming Stone Cold Steve Austin. So when Shawn Michaels left abruptly, the top heel in the company, and you can make the argument that the top guy in the company was up for grabs because Stone Cold Steve Austin was not even a year into his main event title push. So in light of Shawn Michaels leaving, you had a lot of guys stepped up. I think in the immediate, you had The Undertaker step up as a top heel to Stone Cold Steve Austin. Then slowly but surely, you know, you had the corporate ministry show up, the corporation. Eventually, The Rock became the top heel. And then slowly but surely, as they creeped into late 1999 and the year 2000, Triple H made his way into the main event picture as a heel. And by late 1999, Triple H was the top heel in the company. And because The Rock had turned babyface to compensate for Stone Cold Steve Austin leaving, who had left in 1999 for injury. So with The Rock as now the top babyface in the company, with Stone Cold Steve Austin being on the shelf, Triple H slid into the role as the company's top heel. And then entering the year 2000, he was cemented as the top heel in the business. You know, he had the early feud with Mick Foley that stretched on from the Royal Rumble and No Way Out. Then in the main event of WrestleMania 2000, he retained the championship and formed the alliance with Vince McMahon, the McMahon-Helmsley regime. Easy enough for me to say, eh? And then I think the year 2000 was in large part the year of Triple H versus The Rock. And that was a rivalry that was very underrated. And those two guys really bridged the gap until Stone Cold Steve Austin came back. Year 2001, he missed a lot of time in because of his knee injury. And then he came back in early 2002 as a babyface, won the Royal Rumble, won the Undisputed Championship at WrestleMania 18 against Chris Jericho, and was a top babyface. But Triple H was one of those guys who never really sat well as a babyface. He was very similar to Randy Orton in that regard, that he could do it and everyone liked him because he was such a beloved wrestler as a whole. But at the end of the day, we always knew that he was a heel. But in 2002, he was a babyface. He lost the Undisputed Championship quickly to Hulk Hogan at, I believe it was Judgment Day, a few pay-per-view, or it may have even been Backlash. He lost it really fast to Hulk Hogan in the spring of 2002, which I always found bizarre because, you know, they built him up in this big personal angle against Chris Jericho leading into the main event of WrestleMania 18, one of the most underwhelming main events in quite some time. And then he lost it in under 2 months. So that was kind of bizarre. But during this time, Shawn Michaels made his return to WWE, and it wasn't exactly right away as an in-ring competitor. He came back with the NWO, aligning himself with Kevin Nash to start, but after a while, him and Triple H rekindled their friendship as D-Generation X members, and it seemed like we were going to get a babyface run of D-Generation X. But when they finally made their return together in the summer of 2002, we got to see what actually would happen when these two rekindled their relationship.
And DX, oh my!
You got that right, oh my!
Just when you thought it was safe to turn on the old grappling show, look who's back in town!
Yeah.
The boys who were rebels before being a rebel was cool. Degeneration X. With that said,
well, here we go. That didn't take long, did it?
Not long at all.
These people remember DX.
You're damn right. For the thousands in attendance, and for the millions watching at home,
as you heard, just when you think Degeneration X is back for the first time in 5 years as the original group, obviously we had the new addition with the McMahon-Helmsley regime and X-Pac and the New Age Outlaws, but as the original two, the original founding members, you had Triple H and Shawn Michaels in the ring for the first time in 5 years. That is abruptly halted with Triple H turning heel and pedigreeing Shawn Michaels. And as Jim Ross said, again, first time HBK had been in the ring in 5 years. And this leads to an unsanctioned match at SummerSlam, which is Shawn Michaels' first match as an in-ring competitor, his return to the ring. And Matt has covered that in the past, and he did a great job doing so. And a match that Shawn Michaels ended up winning. And it's funny because he actually won that match with a roll-up, which is another example of when done right, the roll-up is actually a very well-used maneuver. But following the match, when Shawn Michaels was on his knees kind of praying to the gods there, Triple H nailed him in the back with this sledgehammer, seemingly re-injuring Shawn Michaels, and we weren't sure if Shawn Michaels was ever going to return. Because the reason in the first place why he left for half a decade was because of his back injury. And I think this was a very important thing that WWE did, that they didn't jump right back into Degeneration X upon the return of Shawn Michaels. And obviously we got it in 2006, and they had an on and off run for the preceding, I would say, 3 or 4 years. And I covered that a few weeks back with their initial feud upon their return with the McMahons. But I think it was very important that they didn't jump back into it, because you had still so much runway left with Triple H as a true top heel. And you wanted to see what Shawn Michaels could do as a singles competitor, as a babyface, because I wasn't watching wrestling back in the mid-1990s when Shawn Michaels was at his very peak as the top heel in the company. But aside from when he was in the tag team with Marty Jannetty with the Rockers, I don't think we ever saw Shawn Michaels pushed as a top babyface. And obviously we know that in real life that he went through, he became born again Christian and cleaned himself up and came back just as an entirely different man. So I think it was very important to push Shawn Michaels as a babyface, and you knew that the crowd would love him. And we did see that upon his return during the Ruthless Aggression era. And we all knew that WWE needed as many big-name reinforcements as they could get in the summer of 2002 leading into 2003. Because you have to remember, they were fresh off of the walkout of Stone Cold Steve Austin. The Rock already had one foot out the door to Hollywood. So they knew that in the short term, they needed guys to compensate for the departures of the two biggest stars the industry had ever seen in The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So Shawn Michaels didn't get back in the ring following SummerSlam 2002 until Survivor Series 2002. Where we saw the first ever Elimination Chamber match. And this featured, obviously, Triple H, who was the World Heavyweight Champion, Shawn Michaels, Booker T, Chris Jericho, Rob Van Dam, and Kane. And this was a very good match. I've watched it several times, and I would really suggest you guys go back and watch it. And it came down to Shawn Michaels and Triple H. And Shawn Michaels defeated Triple H to win his first ever World Heavyweight Championship and his first world title since he lost it to Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14. And I thought this was really good because it cemented Shawn Michaels as a main event guy upon his return. Because even though we all knew the history of HBK and that he was the top guy in the business during the mid-1990s all the way until 97, until he went on the shelf to nurse his back injury for 5 years. But for new fans like myself, I had never seen him in the ring live. So while I knew the history of Shawn Michaels, it was all by hearsay. It was all by, you know, the history books. So for them to bring him back and cement him as a true top guy by winning the World Heavyweight Championship in the first ever Elimination Chamber match was a good way to put him over as a top babyface with the new generation of fans. And the one thing that wasn't so great is that it was his only world title, and to be honest, his only singles championship run upon his return to the company in 2002, and it was very short-lived as he dropped it about a month later back to Triple H in a Three Stages of Hell match at Armageddon 2002. And I don't know why they did this, why he only had one run as a world champion upon his return to the company, and it was so short-lived. You know, my cousin, Gino, is probably the biggest Shawn Michaels fan in the world, and shout out to him if he's listening. But yeah, my cousin Gino is the biggest Shawn Michaels fan I've ever met. You know, he's read his book, he has so many DVDs, he has about, not even kidding you, 10 action figures of HBK in different ring attire that he's never opened the boxes to. Just a crazy, crazy Shawn Michaels fan. And he told me that in his book, Shawn Michaels said that he didn't want to be the world champion. He had no interest of being the top guy in the company, and that he'd rather give it to guys who were more deserving. So I'm not sure if that's true. Maybe it's all just hearsay. Maybe WWE just didn't want to push him. But it would make sense given the fact of Vince McMahon's notorious love for returning stars. But even though he never held a world championship or a singles championship ever again, Shawn Michaels meant a lot to the company in 2003 as him and Triple H really carried the Raw brand as a whole. And I've said it numerous times since I started doing this show that on SmackDown you had The Undertaker and Kurt Angle who were the workhorses, and on Raw you had Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Because like I said, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin were gone by the spring of 2003. Yeah, they both came back for a short run leading up to WrestleMania 2003 at WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. But after that, those guys were gone. And in early 2003, Shawn Michaels and Triple H kind of separated themselves for a bit. Triple H had a short feud with Scott Steiner, which was extremely underwhelming. And then later had the WrestleMania match with Booker T, where he retained the world title. Shawn Michaels had the Mania match with Chris Jericho, which is one of the more underrated WrestleMania matches of all time. But then they rekindled their rivalry leading back into the summer of 2003, because again, you know, they tried the Scott Steiner angle, that didn't work. They tried a bit with Kevin Nash, that didn't work. They could not find a top babyface to tangle with Triple H on a long-term basis. So they kept coming back to Shawn Michaels in some capacity, you know, and that was leading up until they brought in Goldberg, and he kind of had a six-month-long run against Triple H in the summer of 2003, leading all the way into around Royal Rumble time. But they kept coming back to Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and I think it was because it was the safe bet. And Shawn Michaels got back into the title picture at SummerSlam 2003, where he faced Triple H again, but inside an elimination chamber with Kevin Nash, Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, and Goldberg, in a match that Shawn Michaels actually was eliminated quite quickly, and Triple H ended up retaining the championship. And at this point, they were really back in with the Goldberg versus Triple H rivalry. So it kind of took a backseat to that in terms of Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Goldberg and Triple H feuded all the way until Armageddon 2003. And at this time, you had Shawn Michaels facing the likes of Batista and Randy Orton in the fall of 2003. But after Goldberg and Triple H's rivalry tied up at Armageddon 03, which resulted in Triple H regaining back the championship, they revisited the HBK and Triple H feud. And this is what they did during the Ruthless Aggression era. They would go away for a bit, they would come back. They would separate for a bit, they would come back. And it is because they were the only top guys on the Raw brand, much like Kurt Angle and Undertaker over on SmackDown, along with Brock Lesnar before he left in early 2004. So while they would try, let's say, Kevin Nash against Triple H, or Scott Steiner versus Triple H, or Goldberg versus Triple H, they would always come back to HBK because they knew that was the money ticket. And this led to a World Heavyweight Championship match on Monday Night Raw between Triple H and Shawn Michaels. And we actually thought for a brief moment that Shawn Michaels won the championship.
There's a new sheriff in town, And his name is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
So as you heard, Shawn Michaels gets the pin on Triple H, seemingly winning the World Heavyweight Championship, but Eric Bischoff, who came in to play the part of referee, counts the three and says it is no good because of Shawn Michaels' shoulders being down at the same time as Triple H, hence making Triple H win the World Heavyweight Championship, or retain the World Heavyweight Championship, better yet. And obviously he screwed Shawn Michaels, then tries to fire him. And a returning Stone Cold Steve Austin says that's not going to happen as he now comes back as the sheriff and awards Shawn Michaels a rematch. And this rematch would take place at the Royal Rumble just a few weeks later, the Royal Rumble 2004. And this, I think, was their best match in their rivalry. They had a last man standing match for the World Heavyweight Championship. And I got to say, if you have to watch one match between HBK and Triple H, you have to watch this one. Their last man standing match at the Royal Rumble in 04 was the most gruesome, best storytelling, blood everywhere, finishers, weapons. It was just absolutely incredible. And you just got to go watch it. I can't do it enough justice by talking about it. It was just one of the best matches you've ever seen. And it ends in a double countout as Shawn Michaels hits a sweet chin music. And in just a brilliant visual, he's covered in blood and he's trying to get to his feet to reach the 10 count, but collapses and both of them get counted out. And that results in Triple H retaining the World Heavyweight Championship. And then this leads into WrestleMania 20. But at the Royal Rumble 2004, one Chris Benoit won the Royal Rumble and came over to Raw to challenge Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. And I think this was a case of them recognizing that they needed to add a new factor into Monday Night Raw at the main event level, and they couldn't keep just going back to the well of HBK and Triple H. So Chris Benoit comes over. Shawn Michaels refuses to let him have a singles match with Triple H at WrestleMania, and this results in a triple threat match at WrestleMania 20, one of which Chris Benoit wins the World Heavyweight Championship. And I know a lot of people don't like triple threat matches to main event WrestleMania or multi-man matches for that fact. But to be honest, this was a case where I thought it was excellent. This is one of the best WrestleMania main events or WrestleMania cards of all time at WrestleMania 20 at Madison Square Garden. And this match was just completely knocked out of the park by all men involved, as Benoit wins the World Heavyweight Championship, and it's unfortunate given the real life occurrences that we can't celebrate it more. And then they have a rematch of this triple threat at the following pay-per-view at Backlash 2004, where Chris Benoit retains the World Heavyweight Championship by beating these two yet again, this time making Shawn Michaels tap out to the Crippler Crossface, as he had done the same to Triple H at the WrestleMania. So after this, Triple H and Shawn Michaels have they kind of have the blow off to this feud once and for all, as no belts are on the line, nothing's at stake besides just personal bitterness and a personal rivalry that is 5 years in the making at this point, or actually 6 years if you go all the way back to 1997. And this culminates at a Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood 2004. And this is when I think you see another instance of a Hell in a Cell match really paying dividends, because this is what happened here, is that these two met inside Hell in a Cell. And at this point, you have to remember, Triple H had never lost a Hell in a Cell match. It was his match. And when he beat Shawn Michaels yet again in a match that went 47 minutes long, in June of 2004, it really kind of cemented Triple H as a top heel, and he kind of won this rivalry. And I know he had already been a top heel for a long time, but when he beat Shawn Michaels in the Hell in a Cell, to me, it really cemented him as one of the best of all time. And I think it tells you a lot about what kind of man Shawn Michaels was upon his return, because he was a guy that he was always a main event guy upon his return, but he always lost the big match, and it seemed like he was always in it to put over the guys he was working with. He was always there to put the business first, as he didn't want to hold any world titles. He only had one singles championship run, like I previously mentioned, that lasted a month. You know, he put over Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 21. He put over Triple H in this program that culminated at Bad Blood 2004. And look, I know that they had a match at Taboo Tuesday 2004, but that really wasn't the story they were trying to tell at that point. At that point, they were really pushing Randy Orton versus Triple H, and, you know, the fans just voted in Shawn Michaels. But Bad Blood 2004, in my mind, is where they really blew off this program as a whole, and one that had been going on for 2 years solid on Monday Night Raw, and a story that had been going on for 5 years, dating back to 97. And it was a story that they went away from many times, and they came back to many times. And I think it was because Vince McMahon and creative knew that these guys would always knock it out of the park, no matter the situation, no matter the match, no matter the time. And because that they would go away from it and come back, and go away from it and come back, it always left a lot to be desired. It wasn't just a run-on feud where these guys fought time and time and time again. And adding in main event guys like Goldberg here or Chris Benoit there and the upcoming Randy Orton, you know, this was a good... You just can't say enough about what these two meant to Monday Night Raw during this transitional time. And I've said so many times, from mid-2002 to early 2005, it was a big transition period for the WWE. And over on SmackDown, you had guys like The Undertaker and Kurt Angle pulling their weight. And on Raw, it was very much Shawn Michaels and Triple H being the workhorses of the brand and bridging the gap to the next main event stars like Randy Orton, John Cena, and Batista. And this was a program that I think is, you can make the case, the most personal that WWE has ever produced. And I think it tells a brilliant story. And it came full circle 2 years later in 2006 when they reunited as D-Generation X. And then I know that they had the triple threat match with John Cena at a Survivor Series. So they had other matches that both of them were involved in against each other. But in the actual story of their rivalry, it was culminated at the Bad Blood Hell in a Cell match in 2004 when Triple H went over and really cemented himself as the best of all time. Because like I said, yeah, he was a top guy by this point. But when he went over on Shawn Michaels at that Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood, it really, at least in my opinion, cemented himself as the best heel of all time and one of the best wrestlers in the history of the business. Anyway, guys, that's all I got for you guys tonight. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. I hope you enjoyed this rivalries edition between Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and I will talk to you next week.